Tony.
Hello, Canada. Today's date is April 14th, 2024. Welcome to a full edition of Canadian Common Sense, Canada's Issues, in about an hour. It is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC.
How are you, my friend?
Well, last night I was really nervous because Israel was hitting or getting hit by Iran. And luckily, between the U.S., France, and Israel's Iron Dome, they managed to intercept most of them. They said they sent hundreds of drones. Some of the drones did manage to make strikes in Jerusalem, I believe, and but damage was kept to a minimum. And then Iran decided, oh, you know what? We're going to issue you a warning, Israel. If you attack us for attacking you, we're going to attack you again. So I don't know what's going to happen. Last night, I was pretty nervous. I was thinking this is the beginning of World War III. This morning, I'm a little bit more relaxed about it, but it's a pretty hairy situation over there.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I hate to point this out for all you people who don't like the orange man in the US, but when the orange man was president, and of course I'm talking about Donald Trump, there wasn't a lot of this instability. In fact, he was actually instrumental in the Abraham Accords, which would have been a peace deal in the Middle East. But with Biden in the White House, there just isn't that US strong leadership on the world stage. And I can't even absolve Trump either because he is an isolationist. But at least when Trump was in office, people were scared of him. Nobody's scared of Biden. So now they're just doing whatever they want.
No, and that's true. I mean, I'm not a Donald Trump fan. Everybody knows that who listens to the show. I think he's, you know, he's an idiot. And he did do some good things when he was president. Like, he probably had some of the best foreign policy of any president that I've ever seen. But the thing about Donald Trump is that he's kind of unstable and he's kind of unpredictable. And so the world was very dealing with their own conflicts kind of with kid gloves because they didn't know what the U.S. might do because they didn't know what Donald Trump might do. So there was quite a bit of peace around the world during Donald Trump's time as president. But with Biden, I mean, when he did the Afghan pullout, he showed the world just how weak he was and how the U.S. was completely unprepared for something they had prepared years for. So they're not, the world just is not afraid of the U.S. right now. And I'm sorry to say, but I think it kind of proves that the world needs to be afraid of the U.S. for there to be stability. Because they're not afraid of the U.S. right now, and nobody cares. And they're just starting wars and bombing things. And I mean, this whole thing with Iran and sending drones into Israel, this would not happen. This wouldn't have happened if Trump was in office. This wouldn't have happened if Barack Obama was in office. This wouldn't have happened with George W. Bush in office. This wouldn't have happened with Clinton or even George Sr. I mean, this would not have happened with most of those other presidents in power. But with Biden, because I mean, the whole world knows that he doesn't even know where he is half the time. They're just not afraid.
Yeah, well, I remember this goes back a ways, but when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State and Iran was doing some saber rattling, I remember her quote in the news, she said, well, if they want to mess with us, we'll just obliterate them. So even Hillary would have been a more formidable president.
Well, I mean, look at everybody in Hillary's personal life. I mean, I don't think there's anybody left alive. So they
Well, they all committed suicide, so
Yeah, they all sue. All of the people in Hillary's personal life have suicided themselves. So,
yeah.
I'm sure that the leaders of Iran would have suicided themselves too if she was
Exactly.
president. So,
Yep. Well, all right, Canada. So we've got a lot of housekeeping notes for you here, which we'll get to right now. So, listener Nikki sent us a very amusing article from Global, and it was about the eclipse in Niagara Falls. So, of course, Niagara was the one of the best places in Canada to see said eclipse. And so then Global says, she sent an article from Global, and it said, state of emergency had a downward impact on attendance in Niagara Falls. I think that you called that, Lewis.
well, I mean, they were calling for 1 million people in Niagara. And I think the article said that it got to what, 200?
200,000, yep.
200,000, and it was still the largest crowd they've ever had there. That has nothing to do with the fact that it was overcast, and it has nothing to do with the fact that they declared a state of emergency. It's because of me, Nikki. It's because I told Canadians they were idiots if they all went to Niagara when they're expecting 1 million people there. It's because of me.
Exactly, because the state of emergency was really just an unfortunate phrase, and it was, oh, whoops, we shouldn't have said it quite that way. We should have just said, listen to Lewis. Oh, wait, they did.
Yeah, I'm declaring victory on this one.
And you can. This one is yours. So thanks for the article, Nikki, but you know. All right. So we had some pushback on our when we quadrupled down on our election call last week. And one, okay, now I'd mentioned last week we had someone trolling one of our polls. Now we've got listener Bill from Ontario trolling us directly. He says, okay, guys, you want to quadruple down? I'm saying there's not going to be an election until 2025. And I'm saying due to the lowest voter turnout in Canadian history, the Liberals will squeak through again. Okay, come on, Bill. Now you're just talking silly.
Yeah, come on, Bill.
That's
Don't be a silly boy. That
Yeah.
that's low voter tur that would have to be the lowest voter turnout possible. Like only the Liberal Party membership is coming out to vote because even some of them are voting conservative. Like this isn't even like what you're talking about, not even possible. But I am changing my prediction.
Yes, and we'll talk about that later in the show too. But yeah,
Okay.
but don't go ahead, Lewis, because we're
All
going to
right.
expand
Well,
on it later.
because I now that the Bank of Canada did not lower interest rates, I'm changing my prediction to no election this spring, possibly an election in the fall, but it's not happening this spring because they need those lower interest rates to run on.
And I will be quintupling down, but we're going to have that discussion a little later on as to why I would think that and why Lewis is a little cooler on the idea. But come on, Bill.
Yeah,
Jeez.
Bill.
So,
Don't be silly.
yeah, exactly. So, listener Merrick out in BC, he's actually in your area of BC, Lewis, said that not only does he disagree with the idea of a spring election, he was willing to put wager on it. And said, all right, tell you what, man, putting a steak supper on that there will be no election in May or June of this year. And I said, well, Merrick, if you make your way to Saskatoon, regardless, I'll meet you for a steak sandwich and a beer. Why not? But I'm still right.
Yeah. And I'm not taking that bet because, I mean, as everyone who listens to this show knows, whenever we've predicted an election call by this prime minister, we've been wrong. So I'm not putting any money on it at all.
And that is a very wise choice. So let's go to Nova Scotia. Listener Kenny had wrote in talking about the National Dental Care Plan, and he sent an article saying that a grand total of, drum roll please, six Nova Scotia dentists, six, as in one more than five, have actually taken the federal government up on that National Dental Care Plan. Six dentists in a province of 1 million people. Six.
Yeah, not only is that only one more than five, that's six more than zero.
That's right.
There's a reason why nobody, none of these dentists are signing up for this program, because it's again, like I said before, it's one of these programs that the patient has to have the money to pay for it up front and then get reimbursed. And people who are going to be taking advantage of this program don't have the money to put up front in the first place. And that's why, you see, it's not the only reason. The dentists, my dentist here where I live, is short on dental hygienists. And it's 18 months for me to get an appointment for a cleaning. 18 months. And it's been like that for almost a year, and they can't find more dental hygienists. Like, there's dental hygienist shortages. Like, this is it's why would anybody want to make their customers even more unhappy by signing up to this program and making it even harder for them to see their existing patients? Like, I don't know. This is I'm not There's so much in this country is broken, and these programs are not going to help. And in fact, they make matters worse. And there's more programs that the government has announced that we're going to be talking about later.
Yeah, and from the Saskatchewan angle, when this program was first announced, I had talked to my dentist because I actually had a checkup not long after it was announced, and he just said, "What a colossal waste of effort," from a Saskatchewan angle, because he said the province already has the program in place for low-income Saskatchewanians, and he said it was for, like extractions, checkups, etc. And or cavities, extractions, whatnot. But he said, yeah, so the basics were already covered for low-income people here. So there was really no need for this national plan. So I'm gonna guess there's gonna be closer to zero uptake here. So it's just a
Yeah, well, and I
waste.
mean that's something that we talked about before, and was that a lot of these things for low income people are already covered by provincial governments because it's provincial jurisdiction. And I mean this the same goes for the PharmaCare program. I mean, most people in this country, I think it's north of 90% or right around 90% of people in this country have coverage, whether it's through extended benefits at work or it's through government programs for low-income people. They already have coverage, and it's something like 10% of the country that doesn't have coverage, and yet they want to take all of this out of the hands of private insurance companies to help 10% of the people. The programs are already there for low-income people. So why do they feel they have to, spend taxpayer dollars to cover, drugs for 100% of the population when, I think it's 80% of Canadians have it through extended health care, through their extended benefits. And it's being paid for by private money rather than public money. Like, this is it's so stupid. And it's just one more thing that this government has shown they don't know what they're doing, or they don't care about taxpayer dollars, and or not or and they don't care about taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, and speaking of taxpayer dollars, let's go to the center of the universe in Toronto. So we talked about Chairman Chow and the wacky band of councillors wanting to discuss a rain tax in Toronto because that's the way to fix up their storm drain system. Well, thankfully, citizens of Toronto decided to push back. So now the discussions for the Toronto rain tax are put on hold, postponed until 2027.
Oh, that's
Coincidentally.
interesting.
Yes, coincidentally, it's the next municipal election in Toronto is 2026.
Isn't that convenient?
It certainly is. Yep. So, Toronto, you're spared from a rain tax for now.
Congratulations, Tio.
Congratulations.
No rain tax yet.
Yeah, yet is exactly it. So, for some reason, we were one of the only outlets who was criticizing the pay raise the MPs took on April 1st, long before April 1st. Since April 1st, the lamestream media is all over the idea saying, oh, these MPs got a big pay raise. Of course, after it was already done and nothing could be done about it.
Yeah.
So I just thought I'd look some numbers up for you. So in 2019, when 80 MPs who were eager for pension were elected, the pay for MPs was $178,900, which was pretty good bank in 2019. Now, the MP's base salary is $203,100, $24,000 pay raise in 5 years.
Yeah, and that's for someone that just comes to the House of Commons, sits in the back row, and votes when told to vote.
Yeah.
And they vote the way the party tells them to vote. And that's all they do. They don't have any other jobs, no committees, nothing. That is their only job, is to show up once in a while and sit in the back row and vote on whatever the party tells them to vote. That is worth $203,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the most wasted money I could possibly come up with.
Yeah. And you think, speaking of tone deaf, that maybe they would try to show a little solidarity with working Canadians and maybe even just freeze the pay for a while, like the Stephen Harper government did.
Oh, you're so funny, Tony.
Yeah, exactly. And there is precedent because in 2010, in a minority government situation, well, the Stephen Harper government froze MP pay for 3 years because they said Canadians are hurting from this 2008, 2009 recession. We need to show some solidarity. Whatever happened to leadership?
Yeah. But now, if I remember correctly, the first raise they got after that pause or that freeze was a pretty big one. Like, I don't think it was just a modest 3% or anything like that. I think it was a pretty big raise. To kind of make up for their freeze is what I remember, which is wrong too. I mean, they shouldn't be getting, oh, hey, you're getting your whole, what you would have got anyway.
In one
You're
bump.
getting it. Yeah, like it's so stupid. Like, I'm just so sick and tired of these politicians thinking that money's theirs. Like Jagmeet Singh, outside of the government cabinet, outside of Justin Trudeau and Chrystia Freeland and the senior ministers, the most expensive MP this country has is Jagmeet Singh. And I believe he billed the government for, what was it, $500,000
It was
in
indeed.
expenses? Yeah.
Yep.
$500,000 in expenses Jagmeet Singh billed the Canadian taxpayer for last year.
And who was the lowest spending MP outside of cabinet and prime minister?
Oh, that would be Pierre Poilievre.
In matter of fact, it was. And he actually was very thrifty with taxpayer
Yeah.
money.
It's like
61,000, I think it was.
$61,000.
So,
Yeah.
congratulations and thank you, Mr. Poliev. That's I
Yep.
gotta tip my hat to you.
Yep. I mean, got to be honest, I believe that, most of his expenses were billed to the party because he's flying around the country like electioneering, right?
Yeah.
So all of that would be covered by the party, not by the taxpayer.
Exactly.
So, I mean, But still, he only billed the taxpayer for $61,000 in expenses. And for the leader of the official opposition, that is really, really low. But on the other hand, Jagmeet Singh, and this just proves that, him walking around with bespoke suits and Rolex watches and all of that, it just gives him this like sense of entitlement. That he's somehow better than the rest of us, and that we should be paying for everything he wants. Because how do you, as the leader of the third place party, or is it fourth place?
It's fourth place, yeah.
Fourth place party. How do you, as the leader of the fourth place party, justify billing the taxpayer for $500,000 in 1 year?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I mean, that alone, there should be a limit. There should be a limit, and it should be pretty low. I mean, the official opposition, that should be higher, right? The leader of the official opposition should have a higher limit. But the fourth place party, I mean, what the hell does he do that he actually bills the government for that kind of money? Like, I would love to see a breakdown of that $500,000, because what does the leader of the fourth place party actually do that costs the taxpayer that much money?
Yeah, you're right. Where's the value? Yeah.
Yeah, I want to know. I really want to know.
Yeah, so just to wrap that piece up, so 203,000 just to stand there and bang on the table when you're told to bang on the table. The median income for Canadians for 2023, and this is from a figure from October 2023, so it's likely 2021 or 2022 numbers. At any rate, median Canadian income, we got to stress it's median, not average. Thank you for correcting me on that earlier, Lewis. $64,850 is the median income for Canadians. So, as an MP, you're already clearing three times plus that.
Yeah, almost four times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous, these hogs at the trough.
Yeah.
All right. So, couple more housekeeping items. Our poll last week on Spotify for our Spotify listeners was, will Justin Trudeau deny election interference? Well, I voted in that poll and it was 100% said, yes, he will. Well, oops.
Yeah, we were all wrong.
Yep. He did
Once
not.
again, we were all wrong when it came to what Justin Trudeau would do.
Yep, exactly.
So thankfully, all our listeners are wrong with us, and it's not just us that's wrong.
Yeah, for once. That is
Yeah,
nice.
because Justin Trudeau did admit that there was Chinese interference in the last two elections. Now, one of the things that he also admitted was that he doesn't read his security briefings or his intelligence briefings.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that he said that he doesn't read it just to kind of insulate himself and show that, to say that, hey, I can't be held responsible for this because, I didn't even know.
Yeah, so and we'll get into that too in the show topics because that definitely bears some more of a deep dive. So I want to wrap housekeeping up with a letter I received from the provincial finance minister in Saskatchewan. So I had written in because, well, only Alberta and New Brunswick are actually on track to balance their budgets this year or have announced balanced budgets in their budget. And Saskatchewan has a small deficit, but a deficit all the same. So I just wrote in and said, hey, you know what? In 15 budgets, you've only balanced like two of them. So let's get this done. So she actually wrote back to her credit, even considering she's actually not running for her seat again this fall. But I just wanted to read a couple of the, because she sounds an awful lot like a liberal here. So I thought I would read that out just so that, you could get weigh in with your opinions, Canada. So, of course, thank you for your correspondence. The province's growth plan commits to keeping Saskatchewan's finances strong as part of the foundation for a growing economy and a better quality of life for all residents, including responsible borrowing for capital projects, maintaining a low net to gross domestic product ratio, and paying down the province's operating debt. The 24-25 budget prioritizes investing in the public services and infrastructure that are needed to support a growing population and economy. The budget forecasts a modest deficit in 24-25, which is required to make record investments in our healthcare system, record school operating funding and classroom supports, and record municipal revenue sharing. The budget also includes a record amount in 2024-25 for the Saskatchewan Capital Plan to help maintain and expand the highways, schools, hospitals, and long-term care facilities that are required to support our growing province. And I'll just read the last paragraph here and to skip ahead. When the province's fiscal position allows, paying down debt is a priority, as was exemplified in 2023 and 2024, when higher natural resource revenues enabled Saskatchewan to pay down a combined total of $2.5 billion in provincial operating debt. So I said, that's a lot of liberal gobbledygook for a lady who considers herself to be on the conservative side of the ledger.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview with the British Columbia Business Council or Council of, yeah, sorry, the Business Council of BC. And he was talking about how governments in the country are making it really, really difficult for the Bank of Canada to lower interest rates. Primarily the government of BC, governments of Ontario and Quebec, and the federal government. But the Saskatchewan government isn't faultless in this as either because they're running a deficit. And one of the things that he said was that these governments, especially, like I said, especially the federal government, BC, Ontario, and Quebec, are running such big deficits that it's causing inflationary pressure, and it's making it really difficult for the Bank of Canada to actually lower the interest rates. So they're doing exactly what they should not be doing if they want to make life more affordable. And they claim they're doing it in the name of making life more affordable. And that's one of the things that your finance minister there said to you in that letter was that, you know, this is to help make life more affordable for Saskatchewan residents, right? But that's not possible because any debt that governments rack up is putting inflationary pressure on its citizens. And so everything that they're doing goes totally counter to what they should be doing to make life more affordable. So yeah, no, that's just wrong. I mean, yes, they've got all these things that they need to invest in, but do it when it's a when you can afford to do it, not making sure that you're achieving record investments in infrastructure, record investments in schools, record investments in healthcare. How about make investments you can afford to make?
Yeah, exactly.
Because those record investments don't seem to be working.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So, all right, Canada. So, housekeeping over. We've got a great show for you today. So, on the show today, what the health, Ontario? Let go of our CPP. Trudeau talks. Is Canada behind on climate change? And more. Where do you want to start, sir?
Well, I just want to start by saying that was the longest housekeeping segment we've ever had.
It was a long
yeah,
one.
let's start with what the health, Ontario?
Yeah, because wow, I think that's the best I can say is wow.
Yeah, this one takes the cake.
Yeah, so there in the well, I guess this is in the transgender sphere. Now, there is was a case in, well, we don't know where in Ontario, but in Ontario, where a person who, well, we're going by the initials of KS because we don't actually know this person's identity. And KS identifies as non-binary but female dominant and uses a female name, but KS was born male. So in 2022, KS applied for funding for a penile preserving vaginoplasty surgery, which had to be performed in Texas because it was not available anywhere in Canada. And I should probably add that in Texas, at a private for-profit clinic, just
Oh, the dreaded evil private for profit.
absolutely those dreaded evil private for-profit clinics. So yes, KS would have to go to Texas to get this service done, but was denied by OHIP, the Ontario Health Insurance Plan, because it was not considered an insured service. Note that the Ontario Health Insurance Plan would have insured the service if it was not a penile preserving vaginoplasty. But yes, so anyway, they said no to the service. KS appealed. So now let's just kind of break down what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So KS has the full male plumbing downstairs, let's just say that, and wants to add the female plumbing while preserving the male parts. And well, big surprise, that's not very common.
Yeah. Yeah. When I first heard about this, I thought, how? Like, how is that even possible? How do you,
Yeah.
where do you put it? Like, if you're keeping one, where do you put the other? Like, I don't know. I mean, women might not know this, but every man out there does. There's no room to put a vagina if you're keeping your penis. And the reason I say that all, you know, every man knows this and the women might not is because every man knows that your penis is much longer than just the 6 inches that shows. It goes well up into your body, but it goes almost all the way back to your anus before it goes up into your body. So I would suggest that people go to Google and do a Google search for male anatomy, and then click on images, and you can see a cutaway of male anatomy to see where this goes, like where the penis actually starts and ends. And you're going to be going, that you're going to be saying the same thing as I'm saying is, where do you put it? Right? So apparently it is possible. Because apparently this place in Texas can do it. Now, I don't know how functional any of this is going to be, but oh my, I just can't believe that we're here.
Right?
Yeah, I just can't believe that we're here, that this is actually a thing that's happening. And I can't believe that it got to the point of this mentally ill person taking this to court
Yeah.
to sue for this operation to be paid for. And I can't believe, spoiler alert, that the court ruled in this person's favor.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, they have initially was denied, but then appealed to an Ontario district, what is it called? District court, divisional court, who
Yeah.
then told OHIP, yeah, you have to pay up. And allegedly, according to the clinic in Texas, this is not an abnormal procedure, and they do 10 to 20 a year. But well, that is bothersome to me. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, but why is this the person? Why is this the public health department's responsibility to pay for?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question, Lewis, because KS's lawyers argued that. Let me just find that for you. Because, well, here's the first one. Forcing her because she identifies as a she. So, forcing her to have her, I'm sorry, but I have to read it as it is. Forcing her to have her penis removed would invalidate her identity and be akin to an illegal act of conversion therapy.
Oh
Now, Conversion
my God.
Therapy Canada, just so you can understand how ridiculous this is, and I'm not even saying conversion therapy is, I don't want to make a judgment on the conversion therapy itself, but as an example, if my son came to me tomorrow and said, "You know what, Dad, I really just feel like I'm actually a woman and I need to go ahead and get and I need to start taking some hormone blockers or whatever." I guess he mean he's in his 20s, so it wouldn't be that. But as an example, so if he just said, "Yep, I think I want to be a woman," and I said to him, "Son, can you just sleep on it and think about it for a few days and let's talk about it in more depth then?" That would be considered conversion therapy on my part, and I could be charged and I could be forced into a no contact order with my son just for making that suggestion. That's the conversion therapy rules in this country.
Yeah, and we talked about this when they first started talking, banning conversion therapy in Canada, making it illegal. And I said that this was a slippery slope and it was going to get to the point where just asking the person if they're sure was going to be considered conversion therapy. And that's kind of where we've gotten to in this country. Like, you cannot, the psychologist cannot ask the person if they've got other problems in their life that's dictating that, this direction. They
Yeah.
can't even do that anymore. It's illegal. Like, this is, but how is this akin to conversion therapy by making them, saying that if they're gonna be a female, that they got to get rid of their penis, but if they want a vagina, they got to get rid of their penis. How is that akin to conversion therapy? The person identifies as a woman.
Yes, well,
And
most the most.
last I checked, women don't have penises.
You know, and I thought that too, but there's more to this article. Oh, is there more? She also worried about the risk of complications and urinary incontinence from the urological rerouting and the risk of orgasm dysfunction. She argued the procedure she is seeking abroad is like standard vaginoplasties performed in Ontario, but with the additional procedure, namely keeping that penis. And this is so much fun. Now, unfortunately, I mean, the OHIP is probably going to have to change their rules to include this procedure because it is violating KS's charter rights to security of the person and the safeguards of individual dignity and autonomy. And also invalidates KS's equality. And I just said, security of the person, individual dignity and autonomy. Excuse me, Ontario, you had zero problems violating people's security of the person and dignity and autonomy 2 years ago when the Freedom Convoy was in Ontario. You had zero problems at all forcing people to get in experimental vaccines in 2020 or 2021, Ontario. So, why is this so different? And yes, we know why it's so different.
Sorry. I just looked up vaginoplasty on Google, and I'm a little in shock at the moment.
Yeah, well, I can understand that because I did that yesterday.
I don't recommend anybody do that. Oh my God, why anybody would do that to themselves, I don't know. This is I just don't even know what to say about this, but it's like, why? My biggest thing is, if you want to mutilate your body, I mean, there's got to be some mental illness involved. I'm sorry, there just has to be. And we need to protect those who can't protect themselves. And that's and it, and you're trying to mutilate your body. Now, there's sort of the argument that if you're an adult, you should be allowed to mutilate your body if you want to mutilate your body. Okay. I just don't know why I have to pay for it.
Not only do you have to pay for it, well, I guess you, as speaking as to Ontario residents, not only do you have to pay for KS's surgery and all the probably recovery time down in Texas, because KS won the appeal against OHIP, the province actually had to pay her $20,000 to cover her legal costs.
Oh my God.
So, yes, so keep on paying, Ontario, because sometimes people just need to have full male and female plumbing. Yeah, this
I
is
don't.
a significant win for the transgender and non-binary communities, said KS's lawyer. And I just have to point out, I'm going to have to back up in this article here. The appeal board's conclusion was consistent with standards of care developed by, who knew this existed? The World Professional Association for Transgender Health, an influential group whose guidelines for gender-affirming care for children and youth were found to lack developmental rigor. Geez, Ontario, what's wrong with your developmental rigor, for crying out loud?
And we don't mean to just pick on Ontario here because this is happening across the country, but this case just happened to happen in Ontario. I wish you guys could see me right now because I'm just throwing my hands up in the air. I don't even know what to say or do anymore. I'm just like giving up. It's like
When I was going through this earlier throughout the week, I kept saying to myself, I can't even. And I actually had to practice reading through this out loud so that I could do it and maintain some composure, because I don't necessarily have a problem with, as an example, when I was in my university days in Edmonton, I remember meeting this lady who was a hermaphrodite. And that happens in, very, very rare cases where she was born with male parts below and but essentially a female body. And so, being someone like that, do they need gender reassignment surgery? Absolutely. And it's such a rare case that that sort of thing happens that most of us will never meet someone like that. But I'm okay with situations like that, because this lady was, in every way a woman in how she looked, how she acted, et cetera, except that she was, quote, born a little different, in her words. But I almost ask this, I'm asking myself, like, are people doing this kind of stuff? Like, in the case of KS, are you really, really, really feeling this, or are you just trying to keep pushing that envelope to see exactly how far we will go as a society? Because, I mean, it's moving from the ridiculous into the sublime, and it's driving me nuts.
Yeah, I just don't even know what to say about this anymore. It's I just can't believe that this is where we're at in society.
Yeah, exactly. We'll wrap this up with, I can't even remember who it was I was saying it, but there was a Dave Rubin who was doing an interview, and he's American, but he had, whoever this gentleman was, oh, it was Douglas Murray. He's from the UK. And Douglas Murray was saying that, you know what, they, I mean, the barbarians are going to show up at the gate, and we're going to be arguing about what gender to label them with. And I said, yeah, that's pretty accurate. So, all right. Speaking of barbarians, let's talk about Justin Trudeau for a little while. He
I
actually did.
don't know that I would actually associate the word barbarian with Justin Trudeau, but anyway.
Well, he's good at dividing Canadians, and he's not that bright, so I'm gonna go down that road with him. So anyway, he did show up, and he did talk sort of to the foreign interference inquiry. And I actually got to give him credit, because I assumed he was just going to have serious memory lapses like Andong and Michael Chan and many others. But he actually, instead of having memory lapses, just said, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. So, wow.
Yeah, to be fair to Justin Trudeau, he said a lot more than that, but it was but that's what he might as well have said. Because I mean, he actually came out and said, I don't read my security or my intelligence briefings.
Yeah.
Now, I remember a year ago when Katie Telford said he reads everything, and now he says he doesn't read anything. So which is it? Like I'm gonna go with he doesn't read anything. Because I'm very, it's very suspect whether he even reads or not.
Well, you're right. I'm willing to go with you on that. Like Katie Telford did say, the quote was, we covered that in this show. She said, nothing is kept from the Prime Minister. And he said that, if there's something that someone thinks is important, I expect them to tell me. So
Yeah.
he probably wasn't lying, actually.
And he said that last year, he figures if something's important enough that someone will tell him. And then this year he says, I don't read the intelligence briefings. And I figure if it's something I really need to know about, someone will tell me. This is the leader. This is who is running our country. Like, come on, Canada. Like the remaining 24% of you that still want to vote for this guy, how can you vote for this guy? He just admitted he doesn't do his job.
Good point. Yeah, he does. He just expects that someone will tell him if it's something that they think is important. And then further on, when they asked him about the nomination of Han Dong and why they did not overturn it when David Vigneault himself had actually said that there are some irregularities with this nomination process, that's where he deflected and just said, well, we didn't see enough evidence. They didn't tell us it was bad enough that we should overturn the nomination. No,
Yeah.
actually, that's kind of what David Vigneault had said, that you really need to look into this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe he said that he didn't see sufficient evidence to warrant overturning the nomination. That I think that's what he said.
That is
And
exactly what he said. Yep.
yeah, so I don't know if he would recognize intelligence if it slapped him in the face.
And by intelligence, you actually are meaning not only information, but actual intelligence.
But actual intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's and I guess I gotta say he's either got incredible fortitude for standing in front of these committees, and he's being prepped for these questions. So he's
Yeah.
either got a hell of a lot of guts for making such dumb answers, or he really is just that dumb.
Okay, do you remember, I think it was back in 2017, maybe 2018. I can't remember exactly the year, but it was only a few years after it was only like maybe 2 years after he was elected. Or it might even been at the end of the first year. And he was doing a year-end interview with Rosemary Barton, and Rosemary Barton asked him, what are you most surprised at by this job? And he said he was really surprised by how good he was at it.
I remember
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. No, you're not. You're not good at it, you idiot. Oh my God. This is just, it's unbelievable how this guy actually thinks he's good at the job. Like he really truly believes that he is good at this job, and yet admits the job is really hard, it's really boring, and he doesn't read his intelligence briefings.
Yeah, so he I guess just runs around taking selfies and taking photo ops, holding a hammer the wrong way,
Well,
and
I mean, if he thinks that the job is running around doing photo ops, then yeah, he's really good at that, because that's all he can do without messing. Well, no, okay, let me rephrase that. He can mess up photo ops, as this trip to India proved. So he's not even good at that. There's not one part of this job he's actually good at. Not one.
That's actually true. There really isn't. And well, he proved that more as he was out flying around the country making more announcements, campaigning on housing, that yeah, he is pretty clueless. Now, we talked last week about how he basically told the provinces, I'm going to bully you into submission into doing what I want. And thankfully, Danielle Smith said, no, no, you won't. And in fact, we're actually going to bring a bill before the Alberta legislature, making certain that you don't get to bully us around and you don't get to approach municipalities directly with taxpayer money if we say no to your programming, as a side note. So thank
Yeah,
you for that.
and I'm sorry, Alberta, but now I'm going to pick on you. 46% of you don't want to vote for Danielle Smith. Only 48%. Now, Danielle Smith, with what she did this week, if you don't want to vote for her after what she did this week, you don't even deserve to live in the province of Alberta. Because what she did this week was absolutely brilliant. She is like the best premier in this country, and half of you don't even support her. And
True.
what I'm referring to is when she got in front of a microphone and she said, "These are all the things the federal government could be doing to make your life better, and they're not because they're too worried about interfering in my life." And
Yeah.
she listed off all these things that the federal government should be doing and they're not. And I'm sorry, but if you don't want to support Danielle Smith after that, then you don't deserve to live in the province of Alberta. You should just leave.
Hear, hear. See, this is why you tune in Canada, because you get Lewis a little fired up once in a while and love it. So, what did Trudeau say this week? Well, I put it to you before the show that maybe Justin Trudeau is actually Dr. Evil from the Austin Powers movies, because there was the one announcement. It was on, I want to say it was on Tuesday or Monday or Tuesday, and he was standing in front of a crowd and said, and we are going to announce $1.5 billion for this program. In addition, that's in addition to $5 billion for another housing plan. And our
Yeah.
government is spending a total of $55 billion. And all I could think was, and you will pay $1 million, and put his
Yeah.
pinky finger to his mouth. Like,
Oh my God. And it's funny because I think everybody who has seen Austin Powers was thinking the same thing when they watched him say that, because it was so reminiscent of Dr. Evil. It was kind of creepy. I mean, because he emphasized the billion a lot more than you were when you imitated him. Like, he actually was like really putting emphasis on it. He's like, $4 billion. You know, like, it was, I was embarrassed for him, and I don't even like him.
Yeah, well, I hear you. So some of the programs he was announcing, and this is something that I'll get you to reaffirm right afterward, Lewis. He made this announcement for getting our millennials and Gen Z into homes, and said we're going to announce a 30-year amortization program for first-time home buyers on new builds only. And I was like, wait a minute, how many young millennials or Gen Z have the money to slap down on a new build?
Yeah, no, and this is something I brought to your attention, because I was like, this 30-year amortization only applies to first-time home buyers, and only first-time home buyers that are buying there that are building a new home.
Yeah.
So again, another program that the federal government puts into place to sh to so that they can say, we're doing something to help you, when they're not actually helping or doing anything to help you. Because I don't know very many, if any, first-time home buyers that can afford to build a house, even with 30-year amortization. Because building a new house And I'm not sure how it works in most provinces in the country, but I know how it works in Alberta and I know how it works in BC. But in Alberta, you can go in, like in Calgary, go to a brand new subdivision. There'll be like four or five show homes from four or five different home builders. You go in, each home builder has been assigned different lots. And you can pick your lot and then you pick a floor plan and they build it for you. And BC here, they don't do that for the most part. It's you find a lot that's for sale, you buy the lot, and then you find a builder and you hire the builder. Just the house. Right now, I was talking to a home builder just recently, and he said it is between $250 and $300 a square foot to build a house. So let's say a modest 2,000 square foot home. And let's split the difference at $275 a square foot, let's say. 2,000 times 275 is $550,000. That does not include your lot. And I don't know very many first-time home builders that can afford a $550,000 house. And if you include the lot, I mean, depending on this where you live in this country, like if you live in Saskatchewan, you might be able to find a lot for under 100 grand. If you live in BC here, there's a lot down the street for sale and it's $650,000. And that's it has a view of the lake, but it's you have septic system. You're not even connected to the city sewer at that cost. So I don't know very many, if any, first-time home buyers that are going to be able to afford to build a house for their first build. Now, my wife and I did when we bought our first house, we built it. But that was back when a house was $230,000. That included the lot.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not like th this is another plan that will never be used. And, but they can say they did something.
Yeah, exactly. And what's interesting is he also took a page actually out of Pierre Poilievre's announcements on housing when he talked about the, for example, transit. But parking was a big thing, so he said, and this, and again, this is Justin Trudeau telling municipalities what to do. That, well, let's just read right from the Government of Canada's website. Attaching housing conditions on public transit funding by requiring that any community that wants transit funding will be required to take action that will directly unlock housing supply where it's needed most. Now, Pierre Poilievre was big on this. Close to busy transit stations. Make certain that you could build more apartments, right? So, eliminating mandatory minimum parking requirements within 800 meters of high frequency transit line. That wasn't Pierre Poilievre. This was allowing high density housing within 800 meters of a high frequency transit line and allowing high density housing within 800 meters of post-secondary institutions. Those were both right from Pierre Poilievre. So, well, I guess he has some influence after all.
Yeah, well, these sort of things that obviously resonated with young people, and which is why young people are flooding to the Conservative Party right now.
Yeah.
And Justin Trudeau is trying to steal ideas that are obviously popular. Unfortunately for him, they're too late.
Well, they are too late. Yeah. I mean, none of this stuff will actually be able to help him in the short term. So, really, it's just talk. Now,
Yeah, well, I mean, because I mean, like, this is you can see the desperation that Trudeau is showing, right? And there's a very good reason for it, and it's because the latest polling. I mean, we talked a few, what last week was it last week or the week before where we talked about all these polls?
yeah,
Yeah,
a little bit last week, yeah.
we brought up all these polls and. But the most recent polls are showing that the situation is getting even worse for the liberals. So you can be sure that you're going to be seeing a lot more of these idea robberies by Justin Trudeau, because according to the latest polling, conservatives, if an election were held today, the conservatives would win 225 seats. And the liberals would have 57, the Bloc Québécois 30, the NDP 29. So that's even worse than what we've been seeing. Because the polling we had a couple of weeks ago showed 212 seats for the conservatives, and now they're at 223. I mean, this is getting worse for the liberals. So you're going to be seeing a lot more of Justin Trudeau announcing new liberal policies that are taken right from the conservative policy book.
Yeah, absolutely he will. And let me just find out. There was another one I wanted to talk. Oh, yes. He wanted to, for protecting our existing housing stock, there was going to be a loan, a low interest loan, whatever that's supposed to mean in government speak, up to $40,000 for anybody to renovate their existing homes to add a rental suite. And well, we talked about it before, that was going to be something to help solve the immigration overflow. And I just thought, again, none of your business what I do with my house, but I guess if you want to front people a loan that they want to do it, well, I guess fantastic. But and I'm just looking because I know that there was
not to mention this 30-year amortization thing is something that Harper got rid of in the wake of the subprime mortgage crisis from 2008-2009, because it was one of the things that was contributed to that housing crash, was that people were upside down in their houses. Like, they were upside down in the mortgages in their houses, and their mortgages were spread out over way too many years. And that was one of the reasons they got rid of it. And now they're bringing that idea back, just like in the States where Joe Biden brought back, oh, everybody should be allowed to buy a house, so we got to give people who can't afford to buy houses mortgages, which that is the exact thing that led to the last crash. And both, so the leadership in both our countries are doing the things that led to the crash the last time.
Yeah. Now, this is what I was looking for. I had screenshotted the Renter's Bill of Rights. And this is why Justin Trudeau is pushing so hard to force provinces and especially municipalities to get online. They want to create a nationwide standard lease agreement to give renters more agency. And as part of that Renter's Bill of Rights we talked about, it would require landlords to disclose a clear history of apartment pricing. So a history of, I guess, how much rent you're charging. That would seem what they're asking for.
Yeah.
But the nationwide standard lease agreement. How much control do you want to have over someone else's private property? Oh, all of it.
Yeah, this is something that Trudeau and the federal government can shove where the sun doesn't shine, because I'm a landlord. And oftentimes the costs of owning the home they increase faster than you're allowed to increase the rent by, because BC has rent controls, and I'm sure most provinces do at this point, where the government, every year the government comes out and says, you're only allowed to raise rent by 1.8% or 2.3% this year. All depending on how much the government has decided you should be allowed to raise it by. Now, I've had, double digit property tax increases. I've had double digit utility bill increases. I've had repairs that needed to be done, all this kind of stuff, but I can't raise the rent to cover that stuff. So when you have a tenant who moves out and you have the opportunity to raise that rent to cover the cost increases that you have experienced as the owner of the building. You take that opportunity. Because oftentimes what happens is, but when you have someone move out, you find that you're actually lower, your rent is lower than the market is, than the current market. And that's because you haven't been able to raise it very much, especially if you've had a long-term renter. And so you're not able to raise the rent very much. So what they're doing by doing this is they're trying to prevent you from raising the rent between renters. Which, what if the renter moves out and there's $15,000-$20,000 in damage? You got to be able to raise the rent to help pay for that. And I know, like, what they're trying to do is they're trying to force landlords to sell these homes, and trying to force them to sell these homes to people who are currently renting. Except that none of these people have any money for down payments. Forget that. I mean, just, let's ignore that problem. But that's what they're trying to do. And it's going to blow up in their faces. And I mean, because what's going to happen? I mean, everybody's going to go to black market renting. I mean, nobody's going to rent, make it, nobody's going to register their suites. Nobody's going to, rent. They're not going to post them on public forums. They're going to say, hey, they're going to talk to their friends, find out if someone they know needs to rent a place, and then they're going to rent it on the black market, basically. I mean, and you can't blame them. I mean, it's the same thing as, when they start, putting so many restrictions and taxes and that on all kinds of other things, and you end up having people barter, or you have them, selling, I don't know, somebody, some, farmer starts selling their vegetables on, privately instead of, selling them to the packing house or whatever. Like, you got all these things that start happening because the government has made it so unaffordable to be a landlord or to be in business that it's just not going to happen. Now, the problem is that none of these people that they want to buy these houses are going to be able to afford to buy them. They're just not going to buy them because they can't. They don't have the money for the down payment. It's not going to happen. So these houses are going to sit empty because the landlord isn't going to want to rent them out, and nobody can afford to buy them. So
Yeah, well,
it's a situation that's just going to blow up in the government's face.
and there's going to be a lot of those situations. Like, it seems like they're just kind of throwing things against the wall and seeing what will stick.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to get into why it is I am going to quintuple down on why there will be an election next month. And not only because Justin Trudeau is campaigning around the country talking about housing, and he is, and he's talking about how many $1 billion he'll be spending on every different program. But Chrystia Freeland was recently asked by who knows, but it was reported that when asked if she would be interested in running for Liberal leadership should Justin Trudeau step down, she said, yes, I would definitely be interested in that job. I can't say it as condescendingly as she most likely did, but she said, yeah, she's game for that. And we reported a few episodes ago, Sean Fraser was hosting a fundraiser for his Nova Scotia riding at the Calgary Petroleum Club. So we know he's got some leadership aspirations. So,
I'm
and
surprised that Chrystia Freeland was able to answer that question coherently.
yeah. Must have been in between doing some lines. Yes.
Wasn't what I was getting at, but I was just referring to the fact that whenever she has a press conference and someone asks her a question she doesn't know the answer to, she answers one word every like 8 seconds. Like, you can tell she's trying to think of the next word as she's saying the word that's coming out of her mouth. And it's just, her answers are just so, she is so unlikable. Like, she might be more unlikable than Kamala Harris.
That's actually a really good comparison. Yeah. And And she, well, actually, she wasn't there for that announcement. But when Justin Trudeau and Bill Blair were announcing more money for military spending, and they said, oh, no, she was there for that one. And they said they were going to announce $73.7 billion in military spending over the next 20 years. And I was like, oh, so it works out to 3.7 a year or something like that if you amortize it through the whole 20 years. And it's all these big announcements, and it's the fact that there are other people openly nipping at Justin Trudeau's heels that I've quintupled down that this budget, well, this long dragged out budget announcement is going to be his campaign document. Whether it's a bunch of Liberal MPs abstaining from the vote on the budget or not showing up or outright voting against it because they can see the writing on the wall, they've got to go sooner than later because the Liberal ship is sinking and the captain seems really happy to go down with that ship. We're going in May, damn it.
So I will be very happy if it does, and I will not be surprised if it does. But like I said, I'm changing my prediction to the fall just because of the interest rates being held where they are. I think that they're going to wait until those interest rates actually start coming down before they call that election, because they need to be able to have that to run on. And so I'm saying yes, last week I quadrupled down, but when they announced that the interest rates were staying put, I was like, nope, no election in May. It'll most likely be in the fall, 'cause when the interest rates start coming down.
Well, and that's possible. I mean, there's everything in this budget is aspirational and is long term. So you will have to continue to support this particular government in order to make sure that they get all this stuff done, blah, blah, blah. And so that's why I think they're going sooner than later because only we will protect Canadians from those evil conservatives who will cut military spending, who will cut your pharmacare program. That is only el or no, it's a dental care program that's only eligible right now for 87-year-olds and up. And we'll cut your pharmacare program for contraceptives and diabetes and nothing else. But I mean, the point being that it's going to be only us who will protect Canadians. So
Like I
there's
said,
my pitch.
I hope I'm wrong. And, when it comes to predicting what Justin Trudeau is going to do when it comes to an election, you and I have always gotten it wrong, because he never does things the way other leaders have done them. So we're always wrong. And now that we're diverging, one of us could be right.
Could, yes, we could still both be wrong, but
Exactly.
all right. So one thing we're not going to be wrong about, and that is that the government wants, or at least is talking about the Canada Pension Plan. Because Canada's economy is sputtering right now and is in fact even shrinking, there has been some senior economists and some economists from the major banks in Canada who have said perhaps with the Canada Pension Plan investing as successfully as it has now for the last decade, perhaps we should be forcing the Canada Pension Plan to invest in the Canadian markets because there is so much foreign money leaving Canadian markets. Wow, is that ever a horrible idea?
Yeah, so you're going to force the country's pension plan to invest in businesses the rest of the world doesn't want to invest in.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you want there to be no pension plan when people retire in 20 years, because that's basically what's going to happen. So this is crazy, because the pension plan is supposed to be there for people when they retire. This is not supposed to be a source of investment for Canadian businesses. This is supposed to be yes, it is used to invest in businesses, but Its primary goal is to receive a return on investment so that people, when they retire, will have money coming in every month. If you force them to invest in companies that are not worth investing in, there won't be a Canada pension plan by the time most of us are ready to retire. I mean, maybe they should look at why nobody's wanting to invest in Canada anymore. Maybe they should look at why we have 103% debt to GDP ratio for personal debt in this country. Why, when the next closest is Great Britain at 80%, or in the US at 75% or 73% or something, or that, why is investment leaving this country? You know, like why are we having the slowest growth of any OECD country, and they're predicting that it's going to be the slowest growth for the next, you know, 35 years. You know, maybe those are the things that we should be looking at and rectifying so that it would be worth investing in Canadian businesses.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I don't know if it was the Harper government or if it was the Paul Martin government, but one of them had basically told the CPP, all we're going to mandate you to do is make money. And it has flourished since then. There's $590 billion right now in CPP assets. And I took this right from Stats Can. They currently are looking at 9.3% annualized net return. So they're doing quite well. I
Yeah,
mean,
that's pretty good.
yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, we are all contributing to the plan, but I mean, they're doing really well. They've got a huge amount of assets right now, but also bear in mind, there's only three working Canadians for every pensioner right now. So we need that money. And you're absolutely right. Leave the goddamn pension plan alone. Let them do what they're doing because they're doing well and create the conditions that foreign companies or anybody will actually want to invest in Canada. Don't just raid our CPP.
Yeah, because nobody wants to invest in Canada right now, and that includes Canadian investors. So, like this is not a great situation that Canada's in right now. Like I said, we're last in the OECD for GDP. We're last in the OECD for economic growth. We're last. The OECD is predicting that we will be, Canada will be last in OECD, or in, sorry, in GDP growth until 2060. We have the highest personal debt to GDP ratio in the world. We're at 103%. Great Britain's at 80. The US is at like 75 or 73. I can't remember which one it is. And it just goes down from there. Like we have double the debt that places like Germany have, that Italy has. You know, and these are places that, you know, I mean, the US is like, they have 75% of our debt. And that's a place that credit has always been way too easy to get. So how is Canada sitting at 103%? You know, like we need to really stop acting all so superior to other countries, that we're so much better than other countries, that we're so much better than the US. No, we're not. We're not even close. And
No,
in fact, I think people should even go and look at Bill Maher's monologue on Canada here, that he gave this past week. It is spot on, and he when Bill Maher is making sense, you know there's a problem.
but that's true. And he has been making sense a lot more lately. I think he's being very slowly red-pilled.
Oh yeah. He still hates Trump more than anything. He still thinks Trump is gonna be like he's gonna institute martial law or something. But yeah, no, he's slowly being red-pilled, but yeah, it's just Canada is not in a very good situation. We're in a really, really, really bad situation, in fact.
We are, and actually, we'll wrap the show up talking about that bad situation because you'd sent me a Toronto Star article. Yes, that's the length that Lewis goes to for you, Canada. He reads the Star that Canada can't even get it right spending on climate change. You shocked me with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think that's what I said. I said this is the only thing the government's ever done right.
Yes.
And because the federal government is way behind in climate change spending.
Yeah, I was stunned to hear that because, of course, that's been their mantra ever since they've gotten elected. And I wonder if now what even just from the headline said the government has pledged to spend $49 billion on climate change projects, and has only spent $34 billion on climate change. And I wonder if any of those projects that Catherine McKenna seems to have lost when she was in that portfolio is part of that.
Yeah, I don't know, but like I said, it's the only thing this government's ever done right, and that's not spend the money they said they were going to spend. So I mean, we're like $10 billion ahead there.
Yeah, I think that's actually really good news for once. I mean, it's just like the firearms program when they have spent $40 million, but they've yet to confiscate a single firearm. It's I'm praising them for their incompetence on that file as well.
I think if I remember correctly, the article I read this week said that the firearms program or confiscation program, which has not bought a single firearm yet, has hit $2 billion.
Oh, it has. Okay. Wow.
$2 billion.
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah. And has not bought a single firearm, which, by the way, is a good thing that it has not bought a single firearm, but it is not a good thing that it has cost $2 billion to not buy a single firearm.
Yeah, exactly. But yep, I'm happy with that. So, see, we're kind of leaving you with good news today, Canada, that, well, the government's incompetence has saved us, well, in this case, $15 billion. All right. So, we're going to wrap it up there, Canada. We do want to thank you for joining us. And until next week, it is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC. Good night.
Good night, Canada.
Lewis and Tony.